This show is not a substitute for professional counseling, and no relationship is created between the show hosts or guests and any listener. If you feel you are in need of professional mental health and are a UA student, we encourage you to contact the UA Counseling Center at 348-3863. If you are not a UA student, please contact your respective county's crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company. If it is an emergency situation, please call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.
It's 6 o'clock and time again for Brain Matters, the official radio show of the UA Counseling Center. We are broadcasting from the campus of the University of Alabama. Good evening. My name is Dr. BJ Gunther, and I'm the host of the show, along with my colleague and producer, Catherine Howell. And in case you don't know, this show is about mental and physical health issues that affect college students, and in particular, UA students. So you can listen to us each Tuesday night at 6 p.m. on 90.7 FM, or you can listen online at wbuafm.ua.edu. You can also download the Crimson White app and click on the 90.7 live streaming link. We just started our shows here for the spring semester. We had a little hiccup with, well, I had COVID, in case I haven't told it all of y'all. I had COVID, and that kind of backed us up a little bit. So this is our second show for the semester. We've got a lot of shows coming up till probably the end of April, maybe the 1st of May. So if you're listening and you have some ideas for our shows, please email those to me at brainmattersradio@wbuafm.ua.edu, and I'll consider using your ideas for the show topic. Tonight's topic, I was just talking to our guest before the show started. I can't believe we haven't done this topic, because I feel like it's prevalent. This is a prevalent issue in in our country, and everywhere, really, globally. Tonight's topic is relationships with step families. Relationships and step families can be complicated, and when a new step family forms, each family member faces a unique set of adjustments, and still, it's possible to build a successful blended family. So I hope our guest tonight will help us discuss this, talk about it, answer questions. My guest tonight is from Boulder, Colorado. That's where she is right now, Mary T. Kelly. Mary's a marriage and family psychotherapist and writer who has been specializing in working with women who are dating, partnered with, or married to men with children, step couples, step families for over 15 years. And she has a private practice in Boulder, Colorado, which I just mentioned. Also works with clients through Skype or FaceTime domestically and internationally. And additionally, Mary runs support groups, both face-to-face in Boulder and online. So she's a contributing writer for the Huffington Post and for Stepmom Magazine. She's also the author, and I want to ask her about her book, Eyes Wide Open, Real Step Families, Real Solutions. And I think that was published, Mary, was it published in 2018?
No, that was actually an intention.
Yeah.
That hasn't materialized because my practice is so busy that I need to revise that.
And it sounds fascinating. And I bet there aren't too many, you know, books about this topic. Maybe there are, you know, that actually pinpoint women's relationships.
Yeah, I mean, there are books. I just like to work in kind of research-oriented ways, solution-oriented ways, realistic ways. And a lot of the language around step families is not helpful and causes a lot of problems.
Oh, really? Yeah.
And of course, now, and I've got to change the Skype thing because people may be going, what's Skype? I typically work through Zoom.
Yeah.
So when the pandemic happened, it wasn't really a big change in my business because I'm used to working with people all over the world, because the challenges of step families, which are quite different than nuclear families.
It's universal, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. So
tell us a little bit about yourself before we get started. I've read some of your credentials, but tell the listeners about your credentials, about yourself, and also why you're interested in this topic.
Well, I've been a marriage and family therapist for, I don't know, 20 or 25 years. I actually was a stay-at-home mom and then went back to graduate school in my early 30s and was just interested in this. And when I was working in my practice, I started getting more and more step families. And I was like, okay, there's such a bias here towards stepmothers in general. If I were to go up to 10 people on the street and say, what's the first word you think of when I say stepmom or stepmother? They're probably going to say evil.
Right? There's been movies made about it, right?
Oh, I know. We love
you know, comedies.
Movies, right. And it goes back to Grimm's fairy tales. It didn't start with Disneyland.
Yes, so. You're right. I never even thought about that. You're right.
So it's very entrenched in the culture. So there's this kind of built-in bias. And so I started working with women in this position and started doing some research. There are higher rates of depression among stepmoms than there are biological moms. Biological moms can complain about their kids and people are like, yeah, kids can be hard. Kids can suck. But if a stepmom goes, yeah, it's super hard, then it stops the conversation.
Yes.
Often fathers have like often unrecognized or unacknowledged guilt and shame about their divorces and that they weren't able to provide their kids a mom and dad in the house. So they tend to, research shows, be more permissive post-divorce. And then when they have a new partner come in, they put these almost expectations around them, like they're going to be like Mary Poppins and Mother Teresa and come in and sprinkle their little fairy dust to clean up a mess that they had nothing to do with making. And women often feel like, oh, I'm a stepmom. That means mom. So I have to act this way.
Yes.
And then kids. And so I know that this is going out to a lot of students. A lot of kids are like, wait, what? I mean, you're not my mother. Kids have been quite powerless in all of this. They were powerless in their parents' divorce. They're powerless in who their parents choose to repartner with. Yes. And they often feel pressure like, this is another bonus mom, or this is another person. And they're like, okay, not really, because loyalty binds are quite strong. They're quite primal in nature towards one's parents.
Yes.
And they have super high divorce rates because I think there are a lot of expectations that come with it. Even the term blended family, I don't like using that because it's an expectation. So in first families, they're not called happy families, right? They're just called families.
Right.
So I tend to just say step families because okay. We know what that means, but there isn't this pressure to be blended because they're really more lumpy than they are blended.
Never heard that term. I did a little, you know, I always try to do a little bit of research. And the term blended is used a lot. It's used often. Yep. And in fact, I just used it in my introduction and yes. Really didn't understand. I mean, it's common sense what the definition of blended is, but really didn't understand that. What's the definition of a step family? Is it just obvious? But what constitutes a step family? What constitutes a nuclear family for people who are listening?
So a nuclear family is a biological family. It's a mom and a dad, and they have children. A step family is when there's at least one member who's not biologically related to the other people. So it's definitely a type of family. That's why I just say step family, because a lot of couples would come to me and say, we're failing because we don't feel blended. And I say, the problem is...
Don't use that term.
Like, what? You're going to just...
It sets you up.
Blender and everything's going to be all smooth? That's completely unrealistic.
No.
And it's not acknowledging that there are biological and primal differences. And this is a case where blood is thicker than water.
Yes.
But, you know, we have people saying, love can conquer all. And sorry, that's not necessary.
No.
So it's to try to take as much expectation out and let an organic process happen, which it takes 4 to 6 years for family members to even feel kind of comfortable with one another.
Yeah. And, you know, you're there in a college town, mm-hmm. You know, University of Colorado. And I don't know what percentage of college, you know, of your practice is college students. I'm trying to think. I couldn't tell you how many students I have right now on my caseload who are in step families, you know, or who honestly who come to talk to me. And that's like the first and foremost thing that they're coming for. It's usually not the first thing they're coming for, but it ends up being a part of the session at some point. I spoke with a student, I guess it was yesterday, had no idea that her dad had been married four times. And it came out when we, and I've known her for a little while, but it came out, you know, and it made sense to me then. I was like, oh, I see what's going on. You know, I wish you'd have told me this earlier. But I knew he had been married one other time, but I didn't know four times. So she's had a lot of transition in her life. How does it impact college students differently than it does younger kids?
You know, I think it's hard for everybody. Now, if a kid's really young, if they're like two or three, it's going to be easier because they're not even going to remember their parents being together.
Yes.
But it doesn't negate the fact that there's still going to be that biological connection that's quite strong. College is it's just tough no matter what, because that's not their mother. And 80% of young adult stepkids would say that they don't feel close to their stepmother. And this does not mean that they dislike them. It just means that they're not their person. They have their person. And this can be quite painful to the woman involved because she's kind of maybe knocked herself out because she thought, oh, I'm supposed to be this way.
Yes.
Instead of just recognizing that there's just big differences and to let go of those expectations and just try to build relationships. And it doesn't have to be some big close relationship. You know, it's just it can just be people are nice to each other.
It feels like it has to. I think people feel forced that they have to force a relationship. That's what you're basically describing.
That pressure gets put on the kids. So often talking to college students, they're like, I didn't have any say in any of this. Nobody asked me, which, you know, they can't really ask them.
Well,
and then they have to go back and forth between two homes.
That's what I was going to mention. Mm-hmm.
Quite frankly, is designed more for the parents than it is necessarily for the kid. Because if you can think about schlepping your stuff back and forth, and often to very different homes.
Very different. So you have to constantly readjust. And if you're only going home for a weekend, it's bad. It also makes the person, the student, feel so guilty. Like I hear that a lot, feel so guilty. You know, I talked to a student the other day who she didn't even tell her dad she was coming home because she was going to stay with her mom. And it's not that she didn't like her dad. It's just, it was, you know, just she didn't have time to do both.
And this is something that I really try to get the couple to understand is that they're actually learning a lot of great skills that are going to benefit them later on in life, but that they're very much feel caught in the middle or they don't want to hurt their parents' feelings.
Yeah.
It's not uncommon that when kids become teenagers and they want to, you know, part of their job is to rebel, to say, I'm not doing this back and forth anymore. I'm not doing it.
Yeah.
I'm sick of it. And they typically pick their mothers, even if they have a close relationship with their father, and these fathers are devastated. Yeah. And I just try to encourage them, like, try to see it from your kid's point of view.
Yes.
We're kind of caught in the middle here. And then sometimes parents aren't great. They sneak in kind of like some snarky comment about the other parent. Some are absolutely awful. And that's where parental alienation comes in.
Yes.
Which could exist. I mean, I've seen this happen to teenagers have pretty dysfunctional parents who are successful in parental alienation that can last well into their 20s.
Yep.
Which is awful. Awful. Right?
It scars people.
Yeah. Yeah.
It scars people.
Yeah. So it's not that divorce scars kids. It's how people do it.
Yeah.
And how they, if they would, this is why I don't even like the term, especially stepmoms, stepdads don't, they don't have the evil kind of thing. And men seem like they more naturally kind of go, hey, you do your thing.
Yes.
And support. Women tend to like get in there and they've got an opinion, especially if they haven't had kids. They might think, oh, there's a formula. Like if you just give them the consequences, they'll do the thing.
And oh, like, no.
See, we all got humbled that had kids because we thought the same thing before we had kids. Like, oh, my kid won't do this. They won't do that. And then we give birth to them. We start getting humbled immediately. Realize they have free will. It's like, oh, this is very.
Let's take a break right now. When we come back, I want to talk about, we're already starting to talk about some of the challenges, but let's start talking about some more of the challenges. And also I want to know too, if you, and just hold this thought and think about it while we're in the break. Do you see families all together, the whole step family, all together? So hold that thought. We'll be right back. You're listening to Brain Matters on 90.7 The Capstone.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
This show is not a substitute for professional counseling, and no relationship is created between the show hosts or guests and any listener. If you feel you are in need of professional mental health and are a UA student, we encourage you to contact the UA Counseling Center at 348-3863. If you are not a UA student, please contact your respective county's crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company. If it is an emergency situation, please call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.
Hey, you're back listening to Brain Matters on 90.7 The Capstone. I'm Dr. BJ Gunther. We're talking tonight about step families. And my guest is Mary Kelly. She's a psychotherapist in Boulder, Colorado, in private practice, and been doing this for longer than 15 years. 15 years, is that an accurate number, would you say?
18, maybe it's 19.
A good while. And when we left off, we were talking about some of the challenges. But first of all, before we get to some more challenges, Mary, do you see the whole step family where there's the stepmom, the step parent, the biological mom, the biological father, everybody? Do you ever do that?
No, that would be a really, really rare thing.
I wonder. Yeah.
Just want to keep boundaries between the homes. You know, there's this big thing about divorced people needing to co-parent. And a lot of people, if people co-parent, they do it naturally. But the courts seem to have this big thing about you got to co-parent, you got to go parent. And it's not that realistic. And it just the boundaries. I work with. Often I'll start with the stepmom because women tend to seek help much more than men do.
Yeah.
And then I'll work with them as a couple. And so often when I work with them, it can stream down to the kids. Sometimes I see the kids by themselves, but that gets trickier because you have to have parental permission on both sides.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of moms that don't feel comfortable with that. So, you know, I wish I could see more of those kids, but if they're minors, they have to have permission.
What do you see as the most common step family stressors and problems?
Can I say everything?
Okay. I mean, we could start with the dating. You know, we could start with the wedding, the moving in together. I don't know.
So I have a quick funny story about a wedding. I work with a couple from California, and before I met them, they sent me pictures of their wedding, and it was like everything was perfect. It was a perfect wedding, and they each brought kids in. It was so beautiful and lovely. And so we started the session, and I said, hey, I really like seeing those pictures. I couldn't help but wonder if there were little bubble things above everybody's heads, what they would be saying. And the father said, yeah, my 14-year-old was really pissed. I was getting remarried, got drunk, and ran away.
Oh, my God.
Find him. And I said, well, thank you, because now we can get somewhere.
That's not in the picture. Yeah.
Right.
Nobody would have ever done.
Yeah, thank you. That would be more what I expect, because, you know, these kids have, you know, they have nothing to do with this. And then and they get kind of forced into it. And so it's one thing I've done with people when kids are naturally resistant is, hey, why don't we get rid of the word stepmom and just say, this is my dad's girlfriend. This is my dad's wife. Everybody knows what that means. Stepmom is such a loaded word. It's threatening to the mother. The kids feel these loyalty binds. And so even if they really like the stepmom, they feel uncomfortable. And I'll say, just try it as an experiment. Go home and say, hey, you know what? Just call her my wife. Call her my wife. And what that does is it gives these kids space. And it gives them the space to step in as they want to without feeling like they're being disloyal to their mother.
Yeah.
Or if they don't care for the stepmom, which...
Then they don't have to connect. Yeah.
They don't like the stepmom. I mean, more often than not, if I meet people that are in their 20s, there's like, I couldn't stand my stepmom. I didn't like my stepmom. And to force them to do this fakey kind of thing. The research shows that these forced family times in the beginning just don't work, because it's not allowing people the time to grieve. These relationships are born out of loss, right? They're born out of loss.
That's funny you mentioned that, because one of the articles I was reading, it was actually from the Mayo Clinic, that I was doing some research before the show. The first thing they talked about is one of the challenges is acknowledging, you know, and mourning the losses, because some of these kids really are losing a lot of things, you know.
You could
list those. So that's interesting. Go ahead.
Something. You know, everybody's losing something. The woman that joins the family, he's already had the kids. He's already gone through that. So there's a loss for them. Definite loss for the kids, especially if they've had dad to themselves for a while, or mom, but because I work more with stepmoms. So they have to get you, especially females, their dad brings another female in the house, and there's like some primal competition there, because they want to know, am I still your girl? Am I still daddy's girl?
Right.
So it's so important, but we don't do grief well in this culture. We don't like to talk about it.
Is there a difference if a child or a person has lost a parent and then that parent who's left has remarried? Is there a difference in what you see and how they react to that stepmother or father?
Right. So you're saying they lose their mother through death.
Yes. Or their father.
Yeah. I work. So, you know, I don't get calls from stepfathers saying this is really hard.
No.
That's more what I work with. You know, people tend to think, oh, that's easier because you don't have to deal with the next. But in a lot of ways, it's hard, because when people die, we tend to say we make them
exactly
safer. Like you go to funeral. I've gone to funerals and gone, I didn't realize this was the best person on the planet.
Yeah.
You know, and so that becomes very challenging. And then for the woman, she does step into more of a parental role, because she's there full time.
That's right.
But she doesn't have that unconditional love that you have as a parent, which I believe we have the unconditional love so we don't kill our children.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
And basically why, or else they, you know, they might not be breathing. But so that's really challenging.
Yeah.
And then allowing them to grieve and to have, you know, there's anniversaries when people die, you know, and you don't want to let go of that. So that's a hard place to step.
That's hard. Hey, let's take some email questions. Are you ready?
Yeah.
The first one, what are some barriers to communication when dealing with step families?
Tam, it feels like a really broad question. So let me try this. My experience with fathers, and I think I have a lot of compassion for them, because I think men experience a lot of grief. They experience guilt and shame. But we're not in a culture where men go out for a beer and say, how's your guilt and shame going for you?
No.
About that.
No.
Right. And so oftentimes they don't even know it's there. And so, and they bring a certain amount of hypersensitivity so that if their partner says, hey, I'm not sure that Johnny's learning something here when he did this thing and there's no consequence, they'll go to a place of guilt and shame and then get defensive.
Defensive.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's really helping couples learn to talk to one another without, you know, getting into the defensiveness or the criticism, which every couple has to deal with, but to recognize that for fathers, they tend to be more hypersensitive. So there's a gentle way of doing that.
Because
you want to have a voice in the family.
What do you think are the most common myths when it comes to step families and, you know, versus the realities?
Well, I think one of the myths is that most stepmothers are evil. I mean, I've literally had friends tell me, like,
and there are
the reason for the stereotypes. And it's like, oh my God, they aren't. Now, granted, there are some evil stepmothers.
There are.
For sure.
Yeah.
But the large majority of women I work with are very well intentioned and really trying very, very hard. Yeah. And so I think that's a myth. And I don't know about other myths other than I just feel they're not acknowledged. They're discounted. Stepkids are discounted and the struggles that they go through. And I've noticed this lately, like on morning shows and stuff, it's like, oh, moms aren't getting enough breaks. Moms aren't this. We did this study and moms were doing more of the work. And I'm like, what? Where are the stepmothers? You do know there are stepmothers
yes.
in this culture.
Yes.
It's like they don't exist. They don't exist. And this is super lonely for women, which is why when I started a local meetup group in Boulder about nine years ago,
yeah.
it's like 670 members. That's significant.
That is.
And they feel guilty for their struggles. Kids feel guilty when I get to talk to them alone. They're like, my dad really wants me to love this person. And, you know, they're fine, but
you can't be one way. Yeah.
And one of their major complaints is that they don't get to spend enough time alone with their parents.
Oh, yes. That's another thing I read in the article I was telling you about is, make a point, you know, the advice that was being given, make a point to spend time with your child or your children alone with them. You're right.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's huge because often men sometimes feel like they like the buffer of the partner, which is like, okay, no, you don't get to use the person as a buffer.
No, but I think I have seen this happen, and I know you have, where the dads won't allow that. Like maybe the stepmom behind the scenes is kind of, you know, controlling things. I don't know. But the dad, I've had kids tell me that the dad, you know, has to be with the stepmom with them. And he won't, you know, he can't be with them alone. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, what I've heard men do is, or kids will do this. They'll say, yeah, we don't get to spend much time with dad because of her. And I go, okay, number one,
yes.
Your beef is not with her. Your beef is with your father.
That's right.
You're assuming that she's doing that. And I would caution you against that. But let's say she's an evil stepmother and she's pressuring him. It's still on him. He's allowing it. This is between you and him. So quit putting the blame on her. Because stepmoms usually are the first ones to get blamed, and it's not fair.
It's not fair. Let's take a quick break, Catherine, and then when we come back, I want to ask you about the benefits of being in a high nurturance step family, and also we'll take some more email questions if that's okay. So hang on and keep listening. You're listening to Brain Matters on 90.7 The Capstone.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
This show is not a substitute for professional counseling, and no relationship is created between the show host or guests and any listener. If you feel you are in need of professional mental health and are a UA student, we encourage you to contact the UA Counseling Center at 348-3863. If you are not a UA student, please contact your respective county's crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company. If it is an emergency situation, please call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.
You're back listening to Brain Matters on 90.7 The Capstone. I'm Dr. BJ Gunther, and we're talking tonight about step families. And there's a lot of issues related to stepmoms, especially, and with their stepdads too. But my guest is Mary Kelly. She is in private practice, a psychotherapist in Boulder, Colorado. And Mary does not see many stepdads because they just don't reach out, or they just don't get stereotyped as much, do they?
That's right. Yeah. And they tend to just step back and you know, be supports to their partners, but they don't really get involved in the mess of all of it.
No, you're exactly right. What's the benefits of being in a high nurturance step family? What's good about it?
Yeah, I'm trying to think what high nurturance is, because it's such a long process of how long it takes for people. So
yeah,
even when people are trying their hardest, they're still dealing with grief and loss and going back and forth with all that. What I tell people is, because they're really hard and they're really challenging, when you have divorce rates of 64% to 72% divorce rate in remarriage with kids, they're really, really hard. And so the great thing about hard stuff is it's how we grow. So there is an invitation in these families, because they can be so challenging, for us to look at, why is this so challenging? A lot of women have come in, they've been single, they had these careers, they like things a certain way, and they like things neat and tidy. And then yes, they marry a guy with three kids and they're like, my house is in a sacred space. And it's like, okay, no house with kids is a sacred space. It's chaotic.
No privacy. Yeah.
It's messy, you know, and it's an invitation like, oh, this is so interesting that you want everything all ordered and predictable, and you fall in love with a guy with three kids. You know, like, I think there's an invitation there, right? It's a very humbling experience, and it's an invitation for kids too. They can develop really great skills of going, you don't want, and can't always control this, but you don't want homes to be so polar opposite that it almost feels schizophrenic to these kids.
Oh, yeah.
Be a certain way here and a certain way over there, but they can learn really great skills at transitioning back and forth and making these accommodations and understanding, oh, these are the rules here, these are the rules there, that they can bring into their life that can be a benefit to them.
Yes.
But I'm not sure I'd say, oh, this is just a really great thing.
Right. Well,
it's hard and difficult, but I also, just as a human who lived a while, it is the hard and difficult things that make us better people and compassionate.
And the next email question kind of touches on the struggle that this person is having. And she says, I struggle to want to feel more like a mother than a stepmother, wanting more control over everything, but knowing that will never happen. What do you say to that? That's not really a question, but she has a question, but she led in with that.
Yeah. Well, I would say she's right. She's not a mother.
Right.
And so there is that desire, and I understand that. It's ultimately the kids that decide what the stepmother means to them.
Yeah.
You know, women.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
What is my role as a stepmom? I want to be this role model. I want to be this. And I go, here's your role. Please be yourself. Just be yourself. And If they learn something from you, if they gain something, it's going to happen naturally and organically. And the more you're going to want it, kids can feel that they're going to resist that for obvious reasons. But a lot of times people come in, especially fathers, they're like, oh, she's actually been a better mother than their own. Which may be kind of true, because there's some pretty unhealthy mothers out there as well. But
yeah,
it doesn't matter. And I'll tell people, doesn't matter what you want the kids to think. They decide in the long run what this person means to them. And just please be realistic.
Is there a difference between what if the husband has full custody of his children? And so, because, correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't it usually the mom has full custody and the children go and see the dad and the stepmother like twice a month or something like that? You know, in this situation, what if somebody's husband has full custody, so she has to act like the mother?
Well, so I'll just...
I don't know how to word that.
I hope most states get to where it's 50-50. I know. Have the same kind of rights, but that depends on the geography, right? So
it does.
In a state where it's just automatic, almost 50-50, I think that's more West Coast. I don't know. That's a geographical thing. So that's number one. But let's say they have full custody. What I tell fathers is, your father, these are your children. You have an obligation and responsibility to parent these children.
Yes.
Your partner, and I don't care if you have full custody, she has options, because these aren't her children.
Right.
Now, she's going to probably naturally, you're with them all the time. She wants to have a voice, but she still, even in that case, has an option to go. Because I've worked with women in this situation.
Yeah.
It's been years and they're getting resentful because they don't have that biological drive. And then couples have to work it out, where fathers have to step it up a little bit, because women are typically with these men, like 90, I would hope 100%, they're with these men despite the fact that they have children, not because they have children.
Yeah.
You know, most women who grow up, I hope I meet like a divorced guy or a guy who's qualified and, you know, get married to him.
It's a good point. Here's the leading question, her second question of the emailer. What are your thoughts on fathers who want to fight more time, to fight for more time with the kids, and a mother who says it's not beneficial to the children and their daily routine and aren't really willing to give any more time than the standard visitation?
Yeah. And again, that's, in a way, it's a legal question, like what happened in this divorce decree. So sometimes, let's say men just want to get the divorce over with, and they agree to like 30%, and maybe they live in a state that's going to give them 50%.
Yeah.
So when men realize this, I think they should totally advocate to get equal rights as far as visitation. Now, mothers can have opinions. They can say, well, no, I don't want you to. But that's where, what's the legal precedent in the state that you're living in? So I don't care that, you know, if I'm a guy, it's like, yeah, well, of course you want the kids all the time. That's understandable. But I might have to pursue a legal action, which is tricky, because when divorced people get into postmarital issues, it's hurtful to the kids.
Big time.
You have to understand, I worked with one guy, he wanted to go from 45 to 50%. His daughter was 16. I said, don't touch it. It's going to hurt your relationship with your daughter.
Yes.
Already expressed she's happy with things as is. She had a really great life. He didn't listen. He lost. Probably spent $40,000, and it alienated her from him, because she thought, why couldn't you hear me? So I want them to advocate for it, but take all those things into consideration.
What about if they want to argue about birthdays and anniversaries. And I guess, I mean, those aren't little things, but what if the mom doesn't want to do that kind of stuff with the, I guess it's her right. I mean, if the mom doesn't want to do that kind of stuff with the ex and his new wife and the children.
So typically in the divorce, they kind of make an agreement of how they're going to do birthdays, how they're going to do holidays. Often people will do this joint stuff in the beginning. I'm not a big fan because you really can have separate birthdays, separate Christmases, or separate religious holidays. Kids are very aware and they're pretty uncomfortable when all these
people. Oh, can you imagine? I know.
Yeah. So I'm not a big fan of that. So I kind of say try to make that separate. But sometimes a divorced couple is used to it because there aren't any other people. And so then someone comes in and goes, I really don't want to spend Christmas with your ex.
No.
And then it has to change.
That's bizarre.
The new. Yeah, I mean, some people can do it quite naturally.
I guess.
Super rare. It's super, and we don't want to make that the model.
Well, is that one reason, I mean, what we're talking about just now, what is that one reason why it's so stressful? I mean, that sounds, I don't know if I worded that correctly, but, you know, step-family relationships can be extremely stressful. But
it's not a natural system.
No.
It's a big ask, especially when each person's bringing kids in. That's a whole nother ball of wax. Like, oh, here's your step siblings. And they're like, what? You know, and they're
all foreign
styles. Mm-hmm. And then, oh, we're supposed to be a family. These big expectations that are put on instead of like, really, and then kids lose their time. They got to do everything together as a family and they're not buying into it. And
is this mostly, I mean, you said you see people globally, you know, around the world. Is it about the same culturally across, you know, different countries?
It all seems the same to me.
Really?
It just seems to be the same challenge.
So there's not really a whole lot of cultural differences.
Not that I experienced. That
I believe you.
That it doesn't exist. But people will say, couples will say, we had no idea this would be, it would be this hard. Kids are like, this has been really, really hard.
Awful. Yeah.
I had one woman say, hey, I did 2 tours of duty in Afghanistan and it was easier than this. If I have a meetup group and I have about 20 women there and someone comes, let's say they're like 32 and they're dating a guy with 3 kids and they're like, yeah, I'm just here to find out if he's worth it. In unison, these women will say he's not. Because it's super hard.
It's hard. The last email question is interesting and I don't think we've answered it. It's kind of a reverse question. What are some characteristics that all step families have in common?
Well, I mean, the characteristics would be that they're in a family situation where there's some non-biological members.
Yeah.
That's about all you could say. You know, after that, it becomes kind of.
But it's all different. It's all different dynamics.
Yeah.
What resources do you have for listeners? Any resources? No idea of when you're going to pick up and try to push your book through? Because that's a great idea.
You know, I have so much written because I've written so much about it. I have an editor that goes, just let me do it for you. So I just have to say, yeah, just go do that. Because my approach is I'm very realistic. I'm not into like candy coating, sugar coating stuff. There's just too much pain for it. And then people live in a lot of self-doubt. There's a great book out there called Step Monster by Wednesday Martin. She got her PhD from Yale. She's a social anthropologist. I love this book because she is a stepmom. And so she writes in very conversational style, but it's all research.
Yes.
And I had been doing a blog about, can we please be real about these families? And she had reached out to me and said, your clinical experience is matching the research, right? So that book is so helpful to women in particular who are in the situation that just addresses, like, so many women just, they get anxious before the kids come because everything changes.
Yes.
They get this week and then it changes and they'll say, well, my husband changes. And it's like, well, of course he changes. He's to be a father.
Yeah.
To make up for lost time. Stepmom Magazine is a really great resource. I've written for them every month for 10 years.
Wow.
And that's just a really great resource for.
What about some websites? Do you know of any websites?
No, I'm not. I don't really know websites as much.
Yeah.
There's the Step Family National Resource Center where they can get some basic information there. There's a lot of podcasts out there. There's a woman out of Canada by the name of Jamie Scrimmager. And I'm trying to think what she calls herself. She's on Instagram. She's awesome. And she does these fabulous podcasts.
Oh, good.
I kind of warn women against some of these message boards. I rarely have time to get on them, but women are giving terrible advice.
I think it just stirs things up too.
It does. It stirs things up and, you know, you get your girlfriends going, well, I wouldn't put up with that.
And yeah, exactly.
And it's like, okay, well, I wouldn't put up with some of your stuff. So,
yeah, exactly. You know.
But women really need to find support. They need to find other women. And it's shocking to me. I'm doing a group tomorrow night. They're women from all over the country. They live in New York City. They live in Boston. They live in DC. They're like, I don't know any stepmoms.
I don't. Well, and to that, I don't, I never have known any step family or stepmom groups. Have you, Catherine? I mean,
there's
now that you, I mean, you mentioned it, I've never known of any, and it's needed.
It's so needed because women have, stepmoms have higher rates of depression. They feel lonely. They feel guilty that they have normal feelings.
Yeah.
And so it's really important that they get that support. So I started doing my Zoom local support group and somehow women found out about and started joining that group.
Yeah.
And they weren't in Boulder. So I thought, fine, I'll start my in-person again, and then I'll just continue to do this. But I'd love to reach a lot more people because it's so needed.
Well, I want to mention your Mary T. Kelly. Thank you for being on the show. I want to mention your website. Your website is realstepfamilies.com if anybody's interested.
Oh, yeah, I forgot to mention that.
Yeah, you do have some resources, some great resources on your website. Yeah, definitely. So realstepfamilies.com. Thank you so much for being on the show. I'm glad it's an hour earlier out where you are in Colorado, because I just hate it when I invite people from the East Coast. They have to kind of stay at work a little bit later because they're an hour ahead. So thank you so much for being on the show. I appreciate it.
Thank you. It was great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, let me make a few announcements before we close the show. Don't forget our shows are recorded and podcasted on the Apple Podcasts, audioboom.com, and on voices.ua.edu. Just type in Brain Matters and you'll find some of our past shows. There's also a link to voices.ua.edu on the Counseling Center's website at counseling.ua.edu. And I want to mention the people who've made my show possible. As always, I want to thank the Counseling Center Executive Director, Dr. Greg Vanderwall, Terry Siggers from the Office of Student Media, and my production assistant, Catherine Howell. Also, my colleagues at the Counseling Center and the WVUA staff, and of course, my guest tonight, Mary Kelly. Next week, we're going to have another great show, How to Talk to Your Professors About Your Mental Health. That should be fascinating because I get a lot of students who are terrified to talk to their professors about what's really going on, and they put it off and put it off and put it off until it's almost too late. And that should be a fascinating show. So join us then. Thanks again for listening tonight. We'll see you next week. Good night.
This show is not intended as a substitute for professional counseling. Further, the views, opinions, and conclusions expressed by the show hosts or their guests are their own and not necessarily those of the University of Alabama, its officers, or trustees. Any views, opinions, or conclusions shared on the show do not create a relationship between the host or any guest and any listener, and such a relationship should never be inferred. If you feel you are in need of professional mental health and are a UA student, please contact the UA Counseling Center at 348-3863. If you are not a UA student, please contact your respective county's crisis service hotline or their local mental health agency or insurance company. If it is an emergency situation, please call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.